Hello, good morning and welcome to NewsX. We're live on DSV Channel 421, GoTV Channel 125, across all our social media handles. We're Joe News on TV. Coming up within the next 60 minutes, utility tariffs to go up from tomorrow. Stay because we have details on the show. Also coming up, some unions still on strike despite meetings with stakeholders. We'll engage them here on NewsX. Also, the Works and Housing Minister would be addressing a press briefing earlier today. And we'll give you updates on that on NewsX. My name is Faustina Safa. Please stay for details. Thanks for choosing us. We're a home of independent, fearless, incredible journalism. Now, first, we have to brace ourselves to pay more for more power and water supply. Now, this is because the Utilities and Public Utilities and Regulatory Commission has announced new increases in electricity and water tariffs by 3.02% and 1.86% respectively, effective 1st of October, which is just 24 hours from today. Now, the PURC says this decision is driven by several factors, including a 4.96% increase in terms of their operation because of the depreciation of the cedi against the dollar between the second and third quarter of 2024, as well as adjustments in inflation. Well, we'll take you through the new tariff increments shortly, but let's do some other stories before we come to that. We're keeping our hands on a lot of things this morning. We'll also take you to the Information Ministry because we know that the Works and Housing Minister, Kojo Ponkuma, would be addressing the media shortly. We'll take you there shortly to give you all that details, plus keep our eyes on some of the key things happening this morning around the world. My name is Faustina. Just please stay with us.
Are you ready to turn your home ownership dreams into reality? The Joy News Habitat Fair is back, bigger and better, with everything you need under one roof. Whether you're looking to buy land, start construction, or find the perfect interior design, we've got you covered. This year's theme, Get a House, Make it a Home, focuses on helping you not only secure a property, but create a space where memories are made. It's not just about walls and doors. It's about building a home that reflects your style, meets your needs, and gives you comfort. Whether you're a first-time buyer, a homeowner looking to upgrade, or a property developer, the Joy News Habitat Fair is the place to be. Network with professionals, explore the latest technologies, and walk away with solutions tailored to your housing needs. Come with a dream, leave with a plan. The Ecobank Joy News Habitat Fair is in partnership with Ecobank, the Pan-African Bank, and powered by the Plan City Extension Project from Cities and Habitats, Rent to Own, and sponsored by Elegant Homes, where quality meets value. Safety and Home Solutions. You think of a door, we have it. G&J Technical Services. G&J, the Generator People. Def Tracker Woodlands. A Master Plan Gated City. DPS Pipes. Connecting you to life. Home World Building Supplies. Let's build together. Global Lighting. Your solution to quality lighting. Super Lock. You deserve the best. Everlast UPVC Windows and Doors. The right choice for windows and doors. Syntex Tank. Aya Strong. Aya Tough. Lesh Fortune Limited. Kettins Papa Bilak. Seriously perfect. Build Freeze Solar Hybrid Air Conditioners. Superior Cooling with Energy. DBS Roofing Industry. Your Roof Experts. Virtual Security. Complete Security Solution. Your Bent Security Doors. Protecting Lives and Properties. Clifton Homes. Beautiful Homes. Wise Investments. Tino Solutions. The Renewable Energy Experts. The Main Habitat Fair is on the 30th of October to the 2nd of November 2024. Ecobank Joy News Habitat Fair. Get a house, make it a home. Happy now, happy now.
Now, we will be bringing you shortly what we told you we'll bring you, which is the adjustment in tariffs announced by PRC and what the modalities are. We'll bring that to you shortly. But away from that, striking unions say they won't return to work until their demands are met. We told you last week that the Senior Staff Association of the University of Ghana and others are asking for better working conditions. And we also told you why they have decided to withdraw their services nationwide. But we're just keeping our tabs on that. Let's get updates from George Anzong. He is National Chairman of the Association. He joins us live via Zoom with more. The last time we spoke, you said that you were not willing to change your stance. You wanted key things to be addressed. One, your working conditions, you wanted it improved. You also had some allowances which you say government failed to provide. Now, we had just days into the strike, and it's already biting hard. Are you willing to change your stance?
So, please, we don't just embark on strike. We embark on strike to demand certain things. And until those demands are met, we are not working.
How's the negotiation going? Have you engaged government so far?
So far, no negotiation has gone on. Nobody has reached us, so we are also there. We are on strike.
The Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, have they made efforts to get government on the negotiation table?
This is not about negotiation. Negotiation on these demands have already been concluded. So there's no need for any further negotiation. On this particular allowance we are talking of, we have concluded negotiation. We have signed all that we need to sign. So it is left with the Ministry of Finance to release the funds for payment. That's all.
And so you haven't heard from the ministry so far?
Nothing has been heard from them.
Now let me bring in Salamatu Braima. He is also chairperson of TIL. They have also raised concerns about their working condition and the need for government to meet them halfway when it comes to payments of certain allowances they're unhappy about. He joins us live on Zoom with more on this. The Senior Staff Association, they say they will not return to work. They're adamant to even reach a compromise. They're awaiting the Finance Ministry to do what they have negotiated to do. Now, let's find out from TIL, so far, where are you right now at the negotiation stage?
Good morning to my listeners. Our state here is not different from that of the Senior Staff Association. We jointly negotiated and signed the enhanced allowances. And so we are in the same boat. We are not backing down our strike until the enhanced allowances hit our account. Number two, we are not backing down on our strike until the accumulated tier two contributions that were deducted from our salary are paid to our farm managers to invest.
Thank you, Salamatu, for joining us here on NewsDex. Well, that's the update on the strike by TIL and also the Senior Staff Association of the University of Ghana. They have served notice they are not returning to the negotiation table. They want the Finance Ministry to live up to the details of their contract and ensure they are paid. Let me just wrap up with George Anson. How long are you willing to be on strike? Because as it stands now, you tell me that the Finance Ministry hasn't reached out to you.
Heed to our call. We'll be on strike. As simple as that.
Okay. So now we told you earlier that there would be... Thank you so much, George, for your time here on NewsDex. We told you earlier that you should brace yourself because you might be paying more for electricity and water tariffs effective tomorrow. That's because PURC has announced a 3.02% increase in water tariff and 1.86% increase in electricity tariff. Now, let me run you by that briefly, and then we just talk about how they came about this. Figures is coming up on your screen shortly. We put together some graphics from the PURC statement, just so we get our hands on what exactly government plans to do and why exactly they're putting this increment. Now, it's coming up on your screen shortly. I would also be engaging organizations as we look at some of the key things this would pose when it comes to our finances, and also why ECG is compelled to make this increment at this time. So there you have it for electricity. Consumer group, all 3.02%. For water, for all consumer groups, also 1.86%. That's the percentage increment that PURC is proposing. This is taking effect tomorrow. Also, they are giving us reasons for the increment. One, they say the exchange rate is actually a problem because it's affecting electricity generation cost. They also say that the average cost of gas over the projected third quarter influenced this decision, and the reason why you would be paying more. So these are the group-by-group breakdown, what increment means for each consumer. If you're a lifeline consumer, meaning you have an existing tariff of 65.66% Ghana cedis, now you would be paying 67.64 Ghana cedis in terms of your new tariff. When it comes to residential, your existing tariff is 148 Ghana cedis, 77 pesos. And now you would be paying 153 Ghana cedis, 26 pesos. Now, if you're also within 301 plus kilowatts, you'll be paying you were paying previously 196 0.58 Ghana cedis. Now you will be paying 202.51 Ghana cedis. And so that's the breakdown, really, of the tariffs, what you would be paying now as a result of this new adjustment. In subsequent bulletins, we'll be analyzing how we came about these figures and exactly how government... why this is necessary at this time, especially looking at the sector crisis that ECG is going on facing as we speak. Now, on your screens now is also what the increment means for consumers, and this is for water tariff. If you were a residential consumer spending around 498.48 Ghana cedis on your existing tariff, now you'll be required to pay 507.76 Ghana cedis for the new tariff. And so that's how things are right now. We have just a few more months to the end of the year, but then this is adjusted so that PURC gave reasons for this increment. One key reason is the impact of the cedi depreciation on generation costs. And this is what is driving PURC to make this decision to increase water and electricity tariff. Well, moving on, the Ghana Academy of Arts and Sciences is charging government to place an immediate ban on illegal mining and repeal LI-2462. The group is worried about government's lack of intervention in combating the crisis. It has recommended the following steps, and that is coming up on your screens shortly. One, the immediate revocation of LI-2462 by the executive and parliament to protect the country's forest reserves. If no action is taken, all forest reserves could be lost by 2030. So that's one of the key concerns they are raising. They also want the executive as well as parliament to consult widely with scientific experts and stakeholders when enacting legislation that affects the environment. They also say that they should use their powers under the Constitution to protect the country from environmental threats. They want the executive to stop issuing permits and licenses for mining in forest reserves. Companies currently holding permits should be relocated to new areas outside forest reserves or support to restart operation in these new locations. They also say that those engaged in illegal mining or violating their licenses must be evicted immediately. Well, they also want mining in water bodies and their surrounding areas to be banned immediately. They say no new licenses should be granted for such activities, and the state must enforce these bans strictly. They say law enforcement must act decisively to implement these recommendations with the assurance that the majority of Ghanaians support strong action to protect the environment. Well, join us for a conversation on the extent of illegal mining menace and its implication is Professor Alfred Otingyebwa. He's professor in plant biology. I also have Professor Rose Emma Yebwa. She's a fishery scientist and an aqua ecologist. She joins us via Zoom. But I have Prof in the studio to start a conversation with me. Thank you for your time here on NewsDex.
Thank you very much.
Illegal mining and the impact is quite broad. Because you are on the ground and you see the impact on the meals that we eat, tell us how wide is it when it comes to the impact of the various things they use in mining on our plants?
Thank you, Faustina. Mm-hmm. And on behalf of the Academy, we would like to express gratitude to Joy FM for that media leadership that you are providing to the country. Illegal, illicit, I mean, all those words that start with I are not good. Not good in the sense that they have not gone through proper regulatory process. And when we talk of proper regulatory process, we are referring to situations where people are acting according to a binding law. So anybody who is acting outside that is illegal. And the effects are that when you leave the environment as it is and people take to town to do anything that they would like to do, the repercussions may not be immediate. It will be felt after. And that is where our concern is. And part of the repercussion, as we are seeing now, is the browning or the darkening of what used to be very pristine water sources and the complete removal of forest reserves which have been deserted so many years from there. Now, this is where the implications are.
You specialize in plant biology. In areas where illegal mining is rife, what's the composition of the kind of plants that grow there, even after we've reclaimed the lands?
You mean the kind of plants that should be put back there?
No, when we reclaim the lands,
yes.
We know that because of the impact of illegal mining, the soil is still holding some of these particles for a period of years.
Ah, okay.
So we want to look at the plant biology. Even if we reclaim these lands, are they even fit to eat
for
some of these plants?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. By God's grace, we have opportunities to be able to identify species that can pick up these heavy metals into their bodies. And if we can use these over a period of time, then we can say that based on a reconnaissance survey that will be done to check on the quality of or the quantity of these heavy metals in the system, then we can say products that come out of there can be safe. But until that is done, one would say that all the agricultural lands that we have, which have been overrun by illegal mining, in terms of the heavy metals, mercury and so on and so forth, that have been used to pick up these nuggets from the ground, it will be very, very unsafe.
Mm.
Yes.
Should we, at this time where the older you get, you're more cautious about what you eat, you are trying to eat healthy, you're taking your vegetables, but then there are concerns about the kind of water used in farming. Just paint a picture for us. How dire is the impact when you use water polluted by illegal miners to farm? And what's the impact on an individual who ends up eating some of this produce?
Okay, we have urban farming systems, which lots of people are using waters from gutters to water their farms, you know, small crop, vegetable farms. There you can see immediately the impact of microbes, you know, on the surfaces of the crops, vegetables and so on.
Mm.
But we do not have those eyes, those microscopic eyes, to be able to identify the microbes. We will not be able to do that until people start eating them and there's the cholera and so on and so forth as an outcome. But that's another point. Now, talking about the illegal mining, especially using water that have been contaminated or have been polluted with these heavy metals, that one is even more serious, because here you have large volumes of specially concentrated heavy metals that people have used deliberately to extract gold. Okay? And after they have extracted the gold, the remnants of those heavy metals, they have no idea what it is. And these exist in the environment. And that's why we are referring to the issue as existential threat. Because if we do not act now, the situation, you have accumulation, refers to something as bioaccumulation. All the living things that are around are going to accumulate these. And of course, our existence on Earth is to be able to subsist on what is being produced from the ground. Now, if these have accumulated, these heavy metals, the effects are quite dire. Very, very dire.
Let me bring in Professor Emma, Rose Emma, to join the conversation now, because she's a fishery scientist and an aquatic ecologist. So it brings some perspectives to the situation and why we're calling for government to act immediately. Now, you've been doing your findings, your own research. What did you find when you went on the field?
Good morning, Faustina.
Good morning.
Good morning to your audience. Thank you very much for inviting me, Kevin. The CSIR institutions and the universities have been working on the effect of illegal mining on our food security, our water security, and our health security for some time. I'll talk about the fisheries and I'll talk about the ecology. For example, with the fisheries, you know that lagoons are the interface between the sea and the land. Most of our lagoons have gone. They have become dumping sites. Now, these lagoons are breeding sites for fish. They come, they breed, they nurse, and they go back. And 40% of our commercial fish species use these lagoons, the open and closed lagoons. Most of them are gone. With our water bodies, you know that most of the farmers use these waters to water their farms, to drink, and to use it for their daily activities, and also to fish from. A lot of fishes have gone, especially from our freshwater rivers, the rivers. There are certain species that are only found in Ghana, in the Pra, in the Volta, in the Volta, various water systems, in the Ayesu, the Ankobra. They're only found in Ghana. Now they are all gone. The last fish to stay are normally the mudfish and the catfish. They are very hardy. And when you see that all your species are gone and they are the only ones left, then you know that you are in trouble. So we've affected our lagoons, who bring in these fisheries that you like so much, and 40% of our commercial fishes use this interface. They feed within the mangroves. We've cut down the mangroves for urbanization. We've used the lagoons as dumping sites. With the rivers, because of galamsey activities, the sedimentation affects the fish. That's why they die. So there are a lot of fish kills. Apart from that, the heavy metals that Professor Tinyabo was talking about, mercury, cyanide, arsenic, they, especially with mercury, stays in the water for a very long time. So you think that you have cleaned the water, but these heavy metals are still there. Now, you see, this affects our water security. Security is not just terrorism and all that. When you are secure in food and water and health, you know that everything that you are eating or drinking is wholesome. So what we are doing now is that our water quality is affected. We cannot, there are certain fish that we can't find in there. So most fishes are gone. And I call our water bodies in Ghana aquatic deserts, because most of our major rivers are polluted. I mean, really, really polluted. And then these are the waters that are used for irrigation most of the time. Some farmers have resorted to using such a water to farm. How sustainable is that? So our food security is being affected, and they have been complaining over the years. Our health security, you find that, especially in mining areas, there are a lot of upper respiratory tract infections. You find mercury in their blood and urine. You find deformed babies being born. You find all kinds of things. So
And this is coming at a time where the Pharmaceutical Association have said, notice that in future, their members may have to import water to do basic drugs that they produce for us. There are also concerns by the Ghana Water Company that in future may be compelled to import water if government doesn't deal with illegal mining decisively. What specific measure would you like government to put in place? Because we have seen different measures. We deployed Operation Vanguard to go on the grounds. There were times where we were burning excavators and some fine machines because we wanted to see change. But what exactly would you like government to do to end this menace?
Oh, I'd like government to adhere to all the things the Academy has said, and immediately. And also to listen to scientists. It's as if that scientists are an endangered species now. The politicians do their things without recourse to our advice. We have been advising this. The Academy has been talking about this for years. For years. The Academy has had a series of lectures, conferences, seminars on this. And we even sent, Professor Tinyabo and I, we had presentations, we sent policy documents to the government. But nothing has been done. So the thing that they really need to have is commitment. Commitment. And I will say that both political parties should have commitments. And they should realize that they are representing the people. And if the people are suffering, if our food, water, and health security is affected, how well are they representing us? How well are they representing us? I mean, a lot of the MPs, from where they come from, and mining is occurring there, the water is polluted, the food is affected, the women have even started doing galamsey too. Because, for example, around the Cobra, where the fish can get fish to smoke, they don't get that anymore. In other places, when you get there, nobody asks for your CV, so you can easily get a job. You can go from Prison Street there and get a job. So a lot of young people are going in there. Is that what we want for our young people? Is that what we want for our young people? Are a valuable human resource. And you see, a lot of the mining areas, they are armed. We are nurturing our own private Boko Haram in Ghana. So we really need to sit up, really, really sit up. And I don't think that we should be fiddling whilst Ghana is burning. I feel strongly that that is what is happening. Because a lot of lip service is being paid to what is happening. And this did not start now. It started a long time ago. And right now, it's at its peak. We are in deep trouble. And that is something I don't think Ghanaians realize enough. We are all affected. Whether you live in Accra, Kumasi, family
of Accra. Help me understand how dire the situation is. Because
oh, very
scientist. As somebody trying to work on my health, trying to eat healthy, the better alternative to meat would be fish. Paint a picture for me. If a fish is brought to my table and this fish probably had swum through water polluted by illegal mining activities, what would be the impact on me as an individual?
First of all, you wouldn't know that you are eating fish contaminated with, calamsey water. You wouldn't know.
Mm.
But probably have mercury in there. And mercury affects our bodies in various ways. You know, there's a, I've forgotten the hell, but in Japan there was a time, but they had that problem because of the fish that they were eating.
Mm.
And you see, fish, shrimps, and other aquatic organisms, they accumulate these heavy metals, as Professor Tinyaba was saying, over a long period of time. And it doesn't come out, it stays. So all I can tell you is that, I don't know. That is why I'm saying that we are all, you don't know where your food is coming from. Unless you decide that you're going to cultivate tilapia and catch fish in your house. But even then, the water that you'll be using, you don't know, because you see, Ghana Water Company is complaining. And I think that we don't realize how bad the situation is. Because for a country to have its water, food, and health security affected, and not seem to see, it boggles. I can't understand it. You see, because God has endowed Ghana with so much. There's a joke that when God was creating Ghana, the angels were annoyed with him. Well, why is that a small country? You've given them so many rivers, everything, all the minerals that we have. And then God told them that wait till you see the people I put in there to manage it. Look at what we've done. How can we do this? I'm in anguish because I and my colleagues saw this years ago. I remember my inaugural address at the academy was distressed fish in dying waters. And 5 years ago, I gave a lecture on is Ghana on the brink of ecological suicide. Professor Tinyaba has given a lecture on our loss of biodiversity. The Ejima Forest is one of the few special forests in the world.
So you saw this as far back as 5 years ago?
Longer than that.
Have you tried engaging government as an association to just get their buy-in in some of the research work you have done and how they can effectively deal with the problem?
Faustina, I told you that we sent 2 policy papers to government on Professor Tinyaba's lecture and on my lecture. They acknowledged it. And we have the academy as a whole has been sending statements periodically. Recently, the president was in the papers about the LI that opened up the forests. And the academy has been meeting, have been having seminars, and we've been doing this for a long time.
You think government is all listening?
Professor Mrepu gave a paper on to mine or not to mine. Other professors have talked about the chemical effects of galamsey on our bodies. And Professor Kosa has been talking about this. Talking about this as a body for a long time.
And you think government is not listening?
I do not know. I do not know because I don't know how blind they can be. I do not know.
Let me come back to Prof in the studio and just get his thoughts as we wrap up the conversation. This situation is bigger than we had anticipated. And for some of us in Accra, we sometimes feel we're far away from reality, but it's actually biting hard this time.
Yeah.
There are calls for declaration of state and of government should declare a state of emergency. Do you think that's the way to go?
Well, it depends on how one defines state of emergency. I am not a lawyer. I'm not also a constitutional expert to be able to divert to discuss this issue of state of emergency. But state of emergency, in my mind, as far as the environment is concerned, can be one in which drastic action is taken. The drastic action would be that here we are, hands off all our water bodies. That's number one. 2, hands off all our forest reserves. That would be the beginning point. And you talk about government. The question usually comes up is, who is government? It's us who make the government. Because it's us who have, elected people to represent us in parliament. Okay? And have formed a functional government, which is the executive. And then there's a legislation section. And of course, you, the media people, are also part of government. You are all part of government. If we, when I talk of we, I'm referring to all of us as a group, as a population, are saying that this is what we are seeing and we don't want it, I think that would be the beginning point. But you see, it's not everybody who is convinced that what is happening is bad. Because some people will just argue and say, now, if you ban, what would the people eat? You guys have a question. I mean, I'm sure you have heard that statement before. So before the mining, what were they doing? Were they not eating? See, the issue is, you see, one has to be able to distinguish between that which is not good from that which can be done properly and create good environmental conditions. We are talking about life. And environment is all about life. The ecological systems that we have around us are all about life. The oxygen that you are breathing, the carbon dioxide which comes out, which plants pick up, all of these are about life. The sustainability of life is the most important part that we are talking about. And all of these are within the, if you like, the ambience in which we exist. Now, if we are destroying that ambience, in other words, we are digging our own graves. We are leading towards ecological suicide. And I was expecting my colleague, Professor Nzwamensah, to refer to the term that she has always been using, ecocide. We are actually killing ourselves. And should we continue just to say that, oh, because other people are depending on it, it should continue? I don't think that is proper. I think that, you know, from the academic point of view, we have been established purely as like a learning group to provide support to government in terms of whatever. Because you see, when you come to the academy, there are all kinds of disciplines that are there. All kinds of disciplines. And therefore, when we come up with something, that something which we would come up with would have actually gone through all areas of human endeavor in this country. And so we are considered, and the time that Osagyefo Dr. Nkrumah established the academy in 1959, that was the idea. That here is a new state, a new nation, which is being built, and it needs to be supported by all kinds of knowledge. And that knowledge is actually accumulated within the academy. And of course, these are also provided in the other established institutions of learning in this country. So what we are seeing here is this, that two wrongs do not make right just because somebody has to exist. What about the rest of the population? Okay? And you see, extinction, a racial extinction, is not putting a barrel of a gun on somebody's head. You can poison people. And we are poisoning ourselves.
By illegal mining. They're
calling for mining. Yes.
Government to look at our laws, the constitution, to amend it so that people caught in illegal mining activities could receive firmer and stricter punishment.
Exactly.
Equating it to murder.
You have used the word. I'm glad that you have used that word. Because you see, when you talk of warfare, when you are at war, anything that your enemy can use to eliminate you is considered as part of the warfare. So if, I'm not saying Galamseys are enemies, but right now I can say that they are enemies because they are poisoning the water which gives us the kind of refreshment that we need. They are poisoning the water. But you see, as you said, we have laws, but we are not implementing the laws. We are not enforcing the laws. Ghana is one country that has such huge level of brains, particularly bigger brains, luminaries who are able to sit and think and plan. We get these things on paper, but they are not implemented.
Like your proposal to government that you sent as far back 5 years ago,
well,
sitting on the shelf.
This is exactly the issue. So what we are actually telling government and ourselves is this, that not that this country is lack of expertise. In fact, if you go through our universities, the research institutions, we have the best brains that you can think of anywhere. They are bringing out information. This information are utilized by EPA, for example, which is responsible for the environment. Now, EPA brings out proposals. Somebody has to carry on these proposals to the logical end. Do we have that kind of system? Do we have people who, when they have been given licenses to mine, who will go after and make sure that what has been written in the letter of intent is what is being done? We don't. And don't ask me why we don't. It is because of the nature in which people are employed in situations. Patronages and so on and so forth. I think these things are the kind of things which must be stopped, so that you put round pegs in round holes. People who are able to deliver. Not people who just because of patronage.
Or political affiliation.
Yes. Oh, well, I don't want to use political affiliation because all of us are political animals, animals anyway. But what I'm saying is that the people should be people who are responsible. They have this country at heart and are prepared to ensure that they actually save this country. But not people who, just because of the crumbs that they can receive, they get positions and they're not able to act because somebody else is controlling them. This is the kind of thing I want us to move away from.
Thank you, Professor Alfred Oteng Yeboah. He's professor in plant biology. Let me wrap up the conversation with Prof. Rose Emma. She's a fishery scientist and an aquatic ecologist. Your final words as we wrap up the conversation.
Fosina, I'd like to tell Ghana, we have only one Ghana. And we really need to protect it. What bothers me is what we are doing to our youth. Our human capital is very, very valuable. Is this what we want to see our young people doing? And the frightening thing is that now they are recruiting children. Children are not going to school in certain areas, and women have joined. Before, they used to carry the soil. Now they have gone into the pit to mine. And it is so dehumanizing. Is that what we want for our young people in Ghana? And the beautiful country that God gave us, the water that God gave us, the soil. With Galamsey, the topsoil, which is the fertile agric soil, is turned away. It's pushed aside. And we are just decimating our country. So, and degrading it. So, Fatima, I just want to appeal to Ghanaians for them to know that we are in serious trouble. And nobody should say that, oh, the bell is not tolling for me. You don't know who the bell is tolling for.
Donald Trump is focused on himself.
I don't care about you. I just want your vote.
Kamala Harris is focused on us.
I intend to focus on investing in small businesses, in new families. It's time to turn the page.
Paid for by Harris for President.
The bell is tolling for you. And if we do not act now as a people to say that we are saving our country, it may be too late. The Water Research Institute predicted that in the year 2030, we might be importing water. We are not there yet, but we are now. And it is so frightening. There's something called ecological grief. And for some time now, that is what I've been in. Because if you see something happening, and it happens, it unfolds right in front of your eyes, sometimes you don't wish that your predictions are true. But my last word is that Ghanaians should sit up. Really sit up, because our water, our food, our health security is at stake. Apart from that, the mining areas are mined. Our peaceful country is a threat. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say, Faustina.
So
I am just sad
for
all
the enforcement
time.
On the ground, I'm sure that's what you're hoping to see. And thank
yes,
you so much, Prof.
Yes.
And
GAST, Ghana Academy, has shown the way.
with what needs to be done. If they need more information, there are experts there to help them.
Indeed. Thank you so much for your time, both on Zoom and in the studio. But it's time for us to take you now to the Information Ministry, because the Works and Housing Minister, Kojo Poinkuma, is addressing a press conference. He is giving an update on Ghana's housing sector. Let's listen in.
National level, when you invest in housing or when you pay attention to housing, there are some benefits. At the macro level, it creates a lot of jobs for people. Whenever there's a housing project ongoing, you'll find scores of people who are employed on it. Quite recently, one of the housing projects that we did, the Tesano Security Services housing project, we're informed that close to about 500 people were working on that project for the about 3 years that project was under construction. And today, as phase two of the police project around Adenta is ongoing, a lot of them again have been re-engaged there. So as a lot more housing projects go on, a lot of jobs are created in the economy. Also, when housing delivery is attended to, there's a lot of growth in the construction sector of the economy. Whenever you hear the Ghana Statistical Service say the economy has grown by X or by Y, when you go into the data, you'll find that construction is one of the elements, or one of the subsectors of the Ghanaian economy. So when you're investing heavily in housing, not only are you creating jobs, you are also stimulating growth in the construction subsector and by extension, growth in the broader Ghanaian economy. When housing projects are also ongoing, you will find that communities are developing. So in the places where some decent housing projects have been put up, all of a sudden you find that that area becomes a developed area. Go to Tema Community 22, where our NHF project is ongoing. Go to Adenta, or go to any of the places where you find housing projects. All of a sudden you find that development is taking place in that area. And then finally, when you pay attention to housing, you stimulate wealth creation for various categories of people. The individual who has bought that house now gets an asset class. He may have financed it with a mortgage or a loan, but very quickly he will have property worth 100,000 or 200,000 or 400,000 that helps him on the wealth creation ladder. He can then now take out value from that property and invest in another business or do other things. So you create wealth for individuals, for the companies that do the construction, the real estate companies, you are creating wealth for them. For the companies in the ancillary construction sector, those doing roads and sewage, etc., you are creating jobs for them. The banks that are financing it, they are also getting more money. So housing also delivers a lot of wealth creation, and that's why it's a big deal, not just in Ghana, but the world all over. Now, in Ghana's housing sector, there are a number of challenges that we are contending with, and I just want to highlight them before I get into the specific presentation of what we've been doing so far. One of the first challenges you'll find in Ghana's housing sector is the question of effective housing delivery programs. So in 2015, Ghana developed a housing policy. The policy spells out how we should go about delivering housing. But under that policy, you need specific programs that will help deliver the housing. One of the challenges that we've had in our republic over the years is that we've not had a lot of effective programs to deliver the housing. Sometimes we start, and then for various reasons, the project stalls somewhere along the line. In fact, about 99% of the housing you find today is delivered by the private sector on their own. So they'll find their land, they'll raise their money, and they'll build. And by all means, by the time they finish, the price will be through the roof. Or people, you know, buy their own land and then take their time over 5-10 years to finish putting up their building. So one of the first challenges is that, unlike in other markets where you find a lot of programs to deliver housing in partnership with the private sector, we haven't had a lot of that in times past for various reasons. A second challenge is the challenge of construction finance. If you need to put up a project, these projects that cost about $50 million, $100 million, etc., getting the financing to deliver these projects on time is a big problem. How many real estate companies even can do these large-scale projects or can borrow? And how many banks can on their own here in Ghana finance some of these projects without having to syndicate or rely on other institutions? So construction finance has been a challenge. A third challenge has been affordability. We all talk about affordable housing, but The first part of the question is, how affordable is the affordable housing? By the time you buy your iron rods and cement and concrete blocks, affordability begins to elude you. A fourth challenge is the infrastructure associated with housing. So roads, sewage, water, energy, communication, infrastructure becomes a challenge. There are many projects where you notice that they have even gone ahead to build a shell, but you don't find the roads, you don't find the water or energy or other infrastructure. Saglem is an example. And the consequence is that by the time they are done, it becomes difficult to move people into it. Challenge number five is that even if you are successful in delivering on it, who is going to buy and how are they going to finance it? Housing is not a product that you usually buy off the shelf, that they are selling a building for $80,000 CD equivalent and you have $80,000 to buy. Usually need financing. You take a loan or something. But in Ghana, we have a very shallow mortgage market. The market is very, very, very small. And so we are not able to get a lot of financing. And if we can't get a lot of financing on the demand side, the real estate companies will do 3, 4, 5, 10, 12, and you don't get the supply that you need. And finally, the regulatory environment. Who is enforcing the building code? Who is ensuring that those who are taking money from clients that we are going to build for you, they're actually doing it? Architectural standards, engineering standards, who is enforcing all of those ones? So those are some of the challenges that Ghana's housing sector has been facing in times gone past. However, the good news is that in the last decade, between 2010 and 2021, we've been able to reduce our housing deficit by about 33%. We used to have a deficit of about 2.8 million units as at 2010. And in the last decade, we are now sitting at a deficit of about 1.8 within this period. It's been mostly delivered by private sector without any support from government. And what it means is that a lot of people are priced out at the end of the day. So what is delivered is still very high. And if you can't afford it, then you have to buy your own land somewhere outside the main cities and spend so many years in trying to put it together. And so at the Ministry of Works and Housing, we've been setting some priorities, focusing on which we believe will help us to bring the housing market into equilibrium, at least within the next decade. Over the last decade, we've done about 33% reduction. We're looking at bringing it into equilibrium within the next decade. To do that, we have agreed on some 8 priorities that we are working with, and my presentation today will mostly focus on giving you an update on these 8 priorities. Some of these priorities are about old things that we were doing already as a ministry, and some of them are new. So just want to quickly take you through them. First, priority number one is to resolve the stalled housing projects. There were some projects that were started, work was ongoing, and for various reasons, they stalled. Priority number one is to resolve those ones. Priority number two is that for the ongoing affordable housing programs, you know, I mentioned that there are programs under the policy. One of the programs we have is affordable housing program. So for the ongoing affordable housing program, which has some specific projects therein, we want to fast-track them and bring them to a conclusion as quickly as possible. Priority number three is that we are focusing on initiatives to expand public sector housing. The single largest employer, in Ghana is the government of Ghana. And a lot of public servants have housing as one of their benefits. It's also important because it gives them a place to lay their head and therefore to be able to serve the republic better. But in years gone by, we haven't built a lot of new public sector housing. And so our third priority is to focus on our initiatives that are aimed at expanding public sector housing. Number four, housing is put on land. So one of the things that we are prioritizing is to secure and expand our land banks at the ministry, because we believe that A, it makes it easier for us to do our own housing projects, and B, where we have to do projects with the private sector, if we have land available to them, it cuts their hustle by a significant percentage. But these four are mostly old items on our calendar, which we are prioritizing. And then there are a number of new items that we've put on our calendar since about February this year, when I met with the leadership of the ministry. Number one, which is number five on our list, is to develop a public-private partnership framework to close the housing deficit over the next decade. Remember, I mentioned that we've done about 33% reduction in the last decade or so. But our population is growing, and urbanization is also increasing. So if we don't have an aggressive program to close the housing deficit, let's say in a decade, then we could slip back. And so we've been developing a public-private partnership framework to close the housing deficit. And I'll give you some more details on where we are on that. Number six, it takes a lot of money to do these projects. If we always have to wait for the Minister of Finance to give us some money to, you know, commence a project or to pay for a project, a lot of our projects will get stalled. No wonder some of the projects, some as far back as 10, 15 years are still stalled. So we've had to be working on developing a sustainable financing framework for our housing projects. Number seven, we have started work on a new district housing program, which is one of the programs under the housing policy. And this one focuses on ensuring that we don't just develop housing in the urban areas, but in the rural areas too, we do a lot of housing there. And finally, we are focusing on some legal and policy reforms. So, with your permission, I'd like to get into some details and give you specifics on where we are. So let's start with resolving our stalled housing projects. We had about five stalled housing projects: Boteman, Asokore Mampong, Koforidua, the state housing companies project in Adenta, as well as the Saglemi affordable housing project. The good news is that Boteman and Asokore Mampong, we have already completed them, and now they are fully occupied. But we have three more of these five to complete, starting with the Koforidua affordable housing project. It was started during President Kufuor's era, and it stalled since then. It comprises about 342 units of homes. So more or less about 342 families will get an opportunity to live there if we're able to finish this project. 19 blocks, 54 number one-bedroom apartments, and 288 number two-bedroom apartments. What we've done is to work with the state housing company for them to go through a process of identifying a private contractor who can pre-finance the completion of the work. My understanding is that they've gone through the processes and they have awarded to a private contractor who can pre-finance the works. The contractor is mobilizing to move to site so that work on those 342 units can be completed for our brothers and sisters in and around Koforidua so that they can benefit from it. Today, if you go to Koforidua, I think the new Eastern Regional Hospital is being constructed just around that enclave. And so this is a priority project that we are working to finish. And once we're able to finish it, doctors, nurses, and other persons who live within that enclave can benefit from it. The next is the State Housing Company's project in Adenta. This project was commenced in President Mills' era. It was suspended because of litigation in the era of President Mahama. And the litigation went on for around 10 years. Earlier this year, we managed to get the court injunction lifted so that construction could resume. And by the time we went back on site, there had been a lot of dilapidation. So they had to remove some of the old items, you know, parts of plumbing and electrical and other things had to be removed because